Hey, do you remember the 21st night of September? Well, the band Green Day certainly does. That's because that's the day, 20 years ago, that the album American Idiot came out. And boy, what an album it was. But let's back up a bit, a couple years to the year 2000. The band had released Warning, which, though it got some good reviews, didn't do so well with the record-buying public. So by 2003, there was a kind of a feeling like Green Day was past its prime. And then American Idiot comes out, and it caught the political and social zeitgeist of 2004. Now think about that year, 2004, and you back up to 2000, and it was a contentious presidential election. Then you go 3 years, and it's 9/11. And then you go about a year before the album's released, and that's when the United States got involved in the Second Gulf War. Now, American Idiot wrapped up those 4 years into a pop punkish concept album. That was 20 years ago. 20 years later, what to make of this album, this iconic album? Well, joining me on the Planet LP podcast is Bo Dewar. He is a pop cultural and sports writer, and like me, he's connected to Pop Dose, and he's been on the podcast before. Hey there, Bo. Welcome back to the Planet LP podcast.
Glad to be on a planet other than Earth.
Well, Bo, here we are, 20 years after American Idiot was released. We're recording this in September, a few days after the official release date or the anniversary date. And I just re-listened to the record today and yesterday, a couple of times yesterday. So my belly is full of Green Day right now. And I presume you did as well. So here we are, roughly 20 years later, after the release of this record. What do you think of what Billy Joe Armstrong, Mike Dirnt, and Trey Cool have wrought with this album?
I was pleasantly surprised. I think the notion that I always had that had stuck in my head for a while was that the singles from the album far outweighed the album as a whole, and that particularly I thought Jesus of Suburbia being, I think, an absolutely brilliant punk rock epic. And that contains so many of the themes that go through American Idiot. But they actually do develop the story a bit. And if you compare it to other concept albums, and of course, a concept album isn't necessarily a narrative. I mean, Dark Side of the Moon is a concept album in a sense because it deals with the stresses of, you know, the early 70s.
But American Idiot is a bit more than that. I mean, it kind of follows this one character, right? In a way. And really, he's pining away after this girl, what's her name? But it's sort of a, I don't know if it's quite a hero's journey because it doesn't end well for Jimmy in this one.
It doesn't end well for Jimmy, but it ends well for, well, no, it ends well enough, I think, for Jesus, I suppose. Yeah. You know, the Jesus of Suburbia, and theoretically, St. Jimmy is his alter ego, and he literally, well, he doesn't literally kill his alter ego because that it's something that doesn't really exist, but he figuratively kills off St. Jimmy and goes back to being Jesus of Suburbia. And, you know, the album, it's a little bit open-ended in the sense that it, you don't know if he ends up happy back at home. Or if he's just back at home, he is obviously regrets losing what's her name, which actually is what she's called.
We're not blanking on it.
Right. Yeah. She's never given a name, kind of like Vanessa Bayer in the Totino's ads. She never had a name. I think I was also reading along at genius.com as I was listening to it, and reading the lyrics, it's a very depressing tale. It is a tragic opera, like most operas are tragic. But then you add the music, and I think the hopefulness, I think the determination comes out a bit more. And that's true in Jesus of Suburbia, the song itself, you know, which is, I think, fairly powerful. And again, lyrics are not happy or upbeat, but I think people listen to that and they're not depressed. Or, is, you know, if you sit and listen to The Wall, I'm going to be worried about you. That is just dark. And, you know, you can appreciate it musically. I'm like, I wouldn't sit down and listen to The Wall today. I would listen to, you know, David Gilmour solo and Comfortably Numb. I might listen to a couple of other songs in there, but my goodness, that is a difficult, difficult listen. American Idiot really isn't. I think it's, I think pleasant is the wrong word. It's powerful. And of course, I think the MVP of the album in that sense is really Trey Cool, because he injects power throughout it. And yet also, I mean, there are subtleties to it. I mean, he is, I can't remember if he has any sort of jazz background, but, he plays with a feel that would be very difficult to replicate. And so,
He's definitely a looser. He's not a tight drummer. I mean, he can be when, mm-hmm. when the song calls for it, but if you listen to him throughout, there is a kind of I wouldn't say even relaxed, but maybe that's the jazz feel. It's just playing slightly under or over time, you know, mm-hmm. in a way that makes it feel a bit relaxed. Like this guy's, he does have a lot of confidence as a drummer. That's for sure. He doesn't lack that. And he's definitely a showman. But you bring up one thing, and that is Jesus of Suburbia. And you wrote a piece in Popdos years ago in 2017, and under the title of "What's That Supposed to Mean?" It was your column that you had, and you would analyze various songs. And one of them was Jesus of Suburbia off of American Idiot. Now, as I reread this article, I noticed at times you were, maybe to put it nicely, unkind to the song because of the main character, St. Jimmy. You wrote, "The St. Jimmy character is undermined by the song's misogynistic video, particularly the long version that makes us wonder why we're supposed to sympathize with this dude who takes out his frustration on the women in his life. Just a bit of male privilege on display here." Now, I agree. St. Jimmy is not a guy to root for, but he's an anti-hero, and certainly a character, the anti-hero character has been center in literature, in music. I'm thinking about A Clockwork Orange and the character of Alex, or if you want to use a very blunt analog, the character of Jimmy in Quadrophenia by The Who. So I felt like, yeah, he's an anti-hero, but I get your point. I really do. But I also see what Billy Joe Armstrong is trying to do here. He is kind of paying homage to The Who in a way.
It's telling, though, that in the end, you know, St. Jimmy, the character, the alter ego, has to die. Has to be put away, and then the human who was, I guess, the vessel for St. Jimmy at the time, you know, reemerges because St. Jimmy, I think, is found to be untenable.
You can't
just spend your life wandering the streets of a city, you know, getting high. You have to do something else with your life, and whereas the video for Jesus of Suburbia and I think maybe some of the other videos for this came across as, I thought, a little bit misogynist, I think in the story as a whole, and I'm borrowing a little bit from one of the genius.com annotations here, the woman in a sense is the hero of the story because she basically brings this guy back to reality, says, you know, this alter ego you've created, this is not anything productive. You're not doing, okay, your circumstances are bad. You're not doing anything to make them better.
There's certainly a lot of alienation going on in the song from the get-go. And I said at the outset, remember, between 2000 and 2004, that's where the political and social culture were. They were shifting really hard to the right. And I felt it. I felt this album really kind of spoke to me because even though I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is generally a center-left area of the country, I could feel that ground shifting, and it just felt like, wow, I don't really recognize this country, and I don't feel like I belong within this culture that is starting to bubble up. I don't feel welcome anymore. And I could kind of, identify with what was going on lyrically in this record. So, Bo, how were you feeling in 2004? You know how I was feeling because I just said it, but where were you, or where were you emotionally at that point?
Down, but not despondent. I think if things break a certain way this year, I'll be more concerned because at least in 2004, there was a feeling that, well, there's at least we were able to register some discontent. Now, what was scary about the era that in which Green Day was developing this record was that we were entering a phase where dissent was not tolerated. You know, you were called a traitor if you raised any questions about the Gulf War. The irony, of course, is that the same people who told us that in 2003 are now the people who think that George Bush is a rhino and who led us into these wars. And so the people who called us all traitors for questioning Bush now are questioning Bush themselves these days.
Right.
So
yeah, but I think that's the whole horseshoe politics, right? Because they're right. Not all from the right. They're discontented. And I think there's a certain sense of discombobulation that has happened. I think partially because of the financial crisis and the fallout of that, and then with COVID. And I think that sort of the left-right dynamic is fluid in a way, but it's not lining up neatly like it used to.
In 2004, well, I'll put it this way. I think I appreciated American Idiot, the album, more today than I did in 2004. And I think the reason is in 2004, I expected it to be more directly political, because I mean, the title track certainly was.
Oh yeah,
and so was Holiday.
Holiday, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So you had two political anthems, and I felt like, great, we need all this. And then, you know, listen to St. Jimmy, and at the time, it just didn't really sink in. It's possible that I didn't give it as attentive a listen as I should have, but I just felt like I wasn't grabbed by that story. So, at the time, I wanted to hear more about George Bush rather than St. Jimmy.
So, Bo, I want to play a clip from 2004. This is Green Day's bassist, Mike Dirnt. He is in a documentary that was made about the making of this album, American Idiot. And in it, he talks about what the album's themes mean to him.
In today's society, right now, with reality TV and all the media being swayed one direction or the other, and all the information being thrown at you, and then throw this war on top of it, we've had enough. And we're ready to say, you know what? I feel confused and disenfranchised. And, as individuals, we feel like we're losing our individuality.
So I picked up right away the three big themes that he's talking about: war, reality TV, the erosion of one's individuality. That sounds a little bit like when people talk about folks that vote on the right for a certain person that's running for president. It sounds a little bit like that, because not necessarily the war, and I guess, well, we are, it's kind of, you know, the world is at war with Ukraine and certainly in Israel and Hamas and Hezbollah and other parts of the world as well. But the whole thing about reality TV, you could just take that part out and put the internet on there. And I think you would have a kind of a similar culture and that sense of alienation, maybe dislocation.
It almost makes you wonder if Mike Dirnt is psychic, because it speaks so vividly about the landscape we have now, where right. The media, and again, I'm a journalist, so I'm biting the hand that I wouldn't say feeds me, hands me scraps. The landscape is driving conflict. It thrives on conflict and then drives it. It's almost like the old apocryphal William Hurst quote, you know, you provide the pictures, I'll provide the war. Mm-hmm. The media have an interest in polarization. I mean, it helps them. Because people are, if you're afraid to change the channel, then you don't change it. And that, so it's good for ratings. It's good for page views. And it is very much to the detriment of having an informed or enlightened. I mean, because enlightened, I think, encompasses both being informed and being understanding of other people, which we certainly are not now. listening to it today, though, it does it is a more unique story, and you know the way that the story ties in politically, I suppose, would be that there are just a lot of alienated kids, and it's a little bit strange to me, you know, as a dweller of suburbia. I think the one area where maybe this does not stand up is that I think people would actually be very happy to be suburban dwellers right now. I think the concern is that today's the Zoomers and so forth aren't going to be able to ever afford a house in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And so they say this as poor as Jesus of Suburbia's family was, she had a house.
Well, that's true. And if you flash forward to now, Green Day's album Saviors, it does have that song, The American Dream is Killing Me. It has that sense of that it's unattainable. It is completely unattainable. And I'd like to play another clip, which is actually from 2024. And this one is with Billy Joe Armstrong. The band is being interviewed by Tom Powers. He hosts a show on the CBC called, it's a Canadian show called Q with Tom Powers. And in this clip, Armstrong talks about writing and politics.
It's easy to sing songs, a song like, you know, when you're, you know, young and saying smash the state. It's like, yeah, I believe that kid. Yeah. You know, do I believe the 50-year-old man that's going to say smash the state? You know, it's like, I think when you get older, the world, it gets a lot more complex and nuanced and like what's going on. And I think as time goes on, your views change. And, you know, a song like Living in the 20s, I was writing about how, like it was a lot of like things going on at that time where it was QAnon and the insurrection and all this stuff. And so I was just sort of trying to write almost like coming from a lyrical collage of what was going on.
Well, lyrical collage or not, those were not very nuanced things. QAnon, January 6th. I understand what he's saying. Billy Joe and Mike Durant and Trey Cool, they're all in their early 50s. And they still have that punk spirit. But when they say smash the state now, they're kind of maybe going, well, hang on a second. Maybe not. Maybe things are a little bit more complex now. But then when you go back into your 20s, it feels like it's very binary, very much a binary choice. But then you take what he's writing about now, QAnon, the insurrection. These were older people taking it in, were involved in this. These were people in their 60s and 70s who have been taken in by QAnon, who were motivated to go and attack the Capitol. So it's kind of interesting for him to say that as somebody in their 50s looks at the world a little bit more complex and nuanced, but then you got these people who are a lot older and they're not looking at it that way at all.
I think there's several directions you can go as you get older. I mean, of course, the what my dad always told me is that, you know, Winston Churchill said, a man who is not a liberal at age 20 has no heart, and a man who is not a conservative at age 50 has no brain.
Yeah.
To which I heard a parody that said a man who's not a conservative at age 50 has no money. I have experienced neither of those things. Yeah. I am angrier and more concerned today than I ever have been. And I think it could just be the way things are evolving and the fact that we are dealing with forces that are fundamentally anti-American. And anti-American in, you know, in all of the positive things that we think of with America, with freedom and with the democracy, the things that America is supposed to stand for, and being a beacon for immigrants, you know, all the things that we have always treasured about America, everyone has always treasured about America, we're kind of in danger of throwing out. I've become angrier. I think Generation X has probably become angrier. I mean, you think about us in our 20s. I mean,
kind of a lost generation.
You know, our generation had a very brief moment in the spotlight. It really seemed like the boomers kind of sucked up all the attention for as long as they possibly could. And then Gen X had, you know, Nevermind and Pearl Jam. And then it seemed like the millennials took over like a year later.
It was, so, it was a brief moment in that Black Hole Sun.
Exactly.
Reference another song there.
Right. And I think, you know, we've done a lot of, our generation has done a lot of great things. But I think we've never really quite had the voice. Perhaps we wasted too much of it singing about alienation. I don't know.
It could very well be. It could very well be. And it's a product of how generationally people born between 65 and 81 or 82 were raised. You know, I get the feeling like the St. Jimmy character was, it was very much Gen X character. He was not younger than Billy Joe was writing. I think Billy Joe obviously was writing about himself at some level. But that sense of alienation and feeling detached from the culture, detached from the politics, seeing the kind of fascism creep in and being, in a way, feeling a bit powerless to do something about it. So what do? You retreat into drugs and you try to numb the pain. And you know, we can look at today that, you know, we've got a fentanyl crisis. We've got people that are using drugs to numb some kind of pain, whether it was the pain of the pandemic, being homeless, being financially dislocated. Some of these things have carried over, you know, decades later, or maybe they never went away and they're just more accentuated now. And I think that you're right. There's a sense that, that anger that pervades, especially that you talk about with regards to the political and social culture, that is, you know, we're at a tipping point here where it just feels like it could go either way. And if it goes one way, boy, oof, this is going to be a, this is going to be a tough 4 years, if that, for those who don't agree with who comes into power. It feels like there is a sense that we haven't really progressed much beyond 2004. Maybe some of those things have been tamped down a little bit, but it was always there in the underneath, sort of in the underbelly, and it was just waiting to kind of bubble up. And I think certain social forces collided to make that happen. And it hasn't, as I said earlier, it hasn't followed neatly along the sort of ideological lines.
One question I sometimes ask myself is whether our generation or the generations around us, all the generations that are alive right now, if we were presented with a challenge akin to World War II, if there was a megalomaniac who had taken over a lot of Europe and was exterminating people, would we make the sacrifices, both, you know, with our consumption habits at home all the way to Omaha Beach and, you know, getting on a ship? And I mean, Normandy is something that always sticks in my head because it's, I think there's a sheer randomness to it. I mean, basically, if, you know, if your boat door opened right when a German machine gun was pointed at it, you died. And there's nothing you could do about it.
A lot to unpack there, Bo. I was going to say something about if we had that scenario, like what occurred in World War II, with social media as it is now, and how siloed people are, and how much they want to receive the news that sort of reinforces their beliefs, would they be swayed by something like that? Or would they be cynical? I think about the invasion of Ukraine. We have a world leader who, if he had his way, he would probably grab more territory than just Ukraine. But right now we have a lot of skepticism and doubt because people are being sort of fed a narrative that fits with maybe not quite a developed worldview, but kind of a gut feeling. It's like, yeah, that's how I feel. And maybe therein lies the rub, right? We have this thing called social media that just reinforces what we already kind of feel. These algorithms kind of know what we like because we tell them, we've trained them to say, I like this music versus that music. I'm on this political side of the fence versus that political side of the fence. I believe these things versus those things. And when you have that, and machine learning being what it is, can feed you a steady diet of exactly what it thinks you want. And half the time, maybe more than half the time, it's exactly right.
And yeah. I mean, there was a video that made the rounds a few years ago of men being asked to read tweets that had been directed at journalists and read it to their faces. And it wasn't even tweets that they'd written. It was just, you know, here, sit here and look directly at this woman and read what this tweet says to her. And the men just, I mean, they just get beside themselves. They just get to where I can't spit out the words.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah. Well, let's bring this back to American Idiot as we kind of close this out. So we're at a point where I think we've got two albums. You can bookend them. They're Green Day's latest one, Saviors, and then of course American Idiot. And Billy Joe Armstrong's not talking about the same things. It's different, obviously different times, written in different times. But I see in both albums similar political and similar social issues that have come up. I think that there's still alienation within the culture that pervades. And I think that there's still a lot of numbing that's going on, but there's also a hell of a lot of anger, and where that's directed at people, they sort of objectify or dehumanize somebody in order to destroy them. And why that is, I don't know if we're going to be able to answer it, but there's certainly psychologists and sociologists out there who probably could hazard a guess, which would be much more than I can do at this point. But I feel like that album, when I listen to it, that is American Idiot, when I listen to it now, I still feel that sense, those feelings that I had back in 2004. They're not as strong. A different person in some way, but in other ways, I still understand that message that was being broadcast out by this trio from the Bay Area, and I still find it a very powerful album to this day.
It's going to be interesting to see how the generations younger than us react to this album, and maybe see if they go back and kind of rediscover American Idiot at the same time, because. I have kids who are in college now, and I substitute teach in high school. One thing that I'm struck by is how many kids today, I say kids, you know, teens, are wearing Nirvana t-shirts. So I guess that message of alienation still gets through, but I think, and to end this on kind of a hopeful note, I feel like this generation is more engaged than ours was. I think that they are aware of, you know, the dangers lurking on our shores, basically. In some cases, they're disaffected and both candidates are bad. There's always a danger in cynicism. And I think people mistake cynicism with intelligence and figure that if they just sort of withdraw from everything that they're somehow smarter than everything else. When the fact is you really do have to get in and do something and not just withdraw. So I think that, I wonder if American Idiot would resonate with an 18-year-old listening to it for the first time today.
There's an experiment to engage in. And since you do a lot of substitute teaching, you might want to try that. So, Bo, I want to thank you for being a guest on the podcast for this discussion on the 20th anniversary of American Idiot. That's Green Day's American Idiot, a band that just received the key to the city of Panole, where Billy Joe Armstrong, Mike Dirnt, and Trey Cool were presented this key at a 7-Eleven, where they apparently, at least Billy Joe and Mike went to when they cut school. It was the same 7-Eleven, I believe. When they cut high school at Pinole Valley High School, they went to that 7-Eleven. So the mayor presented him with a key there. So how's that for hopeful? Even if you're all, you know, talking about alienation, someday the mayor is going to present you a key at the 7-Eleven you used to hang out at. Bo, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening and watching on YouTube. I'm Ted Astorgatu, and I'll be back soon to talk about music right here. Planet LP Podcast.